Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery. Like that shout out. A show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. That sounds very official.
I'm still wondering why I'm here, though.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
I won't tell them what you said when you called.
Uh-huh.
Today, we have, sitting in the decadent seat of service, we have Kirk Driscoll. He's a serial entrepreneur and outdoor enthusiast. He'll be celebrating 30 years of sobriety in April 24th.
24th.
And he'll be launching on a 30-day hike to raise awareness and funds. Yes, 30 years. And he's the founder of Vision Warriors, which isn't a program. It's a culture-driven approach to helping men in recovery. And also hosting the show is Sarah with a capital H.
Hello. Hello, guys.
Yes, there we go. My notes say to share a personal touch.
A personal touch?
Yes. So my name's Christian, and I'm the host of the show tonight. And Kirk is a great friend, good brother. And we met a lot of years ago, before we even started what is now Most High. And initially, my wife, Leslie, and I, we knew we wanted to get involved and do something. And so somebody was like, you got to talk to Kirk. So I went to sit with Kirk. We had breakfast. And Kirk told me about Vision Warriors and what Vision Warriors does and how they help guys and their whole program and how it's not about money. It's about making sure that people have a safe place to recover. And essentially, he described what we were thinking we wanted to do here. And so we thought, why be another? If this solution exists, then it made us pivot, which was a good move, because that's how we got here, right? And since meeting Kirk, it's been an honor and privilege to do life with you, share life with you. We took a trip to the bunker in Montana. We've done a lot of adventures. Kids know each other. So, you know, I think this is like the gift. It's like so freaking tired and true, but, you know, you get to the community is the thing, I think, in recovery that makes it worth it for me, you know. So appreciate you being here today.
No, man, it's an honor.
So Vision Warriors. I feel like there should have been a dun-dun. Vision Warriors, you say it's not a program, but a culture.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, since we're recording this on live, you know, Eric will say it a little bit differently, maybe. But and I don't have any dig on a program, and I think programs are great for a moment in time of your life to gain clarity, right? Because they're very structured, and they're very specific to where someone is, and they're wanting to remove themselves from that. Vision Warriors is not that. So everybody that comes to Vision Warriors, to me, they're looking for where they want to go or what they want for life, and they've been stuck, but you can't program that. It's like we talked about it earlier. It's like there's not one solution for everybody, but if you get enough people around the table together that are all want the same things and are trying to figure out how to get there, the gathering of those like-minded individuals and their struggle and in their pain, where you've got shared experiences, that culture can truly radically transform someone. And I really think that's where you can show up and you can show them the love of Christ and see radical transformation with individuals that would never be drawn to church, never be drawn to what maybe is the real radical change that I experience. Mm-hmm. By not coming out of the gate with that, they just are surrounded by people that just truly love them, care for them, want the best for them, but then are going to also, at the same point in time, hold their ass to what they said that they wanted.
Yeah.
Because a program, you know, in my mind, it failure's part of it, right? Because that's why you're trying to quit making those mistakes. But brotherhood and accountability and community is all about holding you. This is who I am becoming. It's kind of not trying to do something. Mm-hmm. I heard it a couple of weeks ago at a retreat we did. It's training to be who you want to be. And so,
yeah.
No dig on a program, but there's plenty of programs. We don't need to be a program.
Does that make sense to you, sir?
Yeah, kind of.
What questions do you have?
Well, no, I like the whole, like, not a program thing, because a program implies that there's a completion to it.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to promote a culture or a new way of life as opposed to a program, it implies that there is no completion, that this is just ongoing, and, like, let me just show you how we do it.
Yeah. And it's continuing
the things
changing.
That's hard, though, I think a challenge is having an organization that, you know, you have some rules, you know, very few rules, you know, but to govern and run, you know, that kind of community that's ran by the culture, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess would change as men might graduate or leave or move on to be reunited with their families. The culture would shift. What have been the challenges? Because, you know, I know you and I know the path. I know how hard it is. But, you know, what have been the biggest challenges and moments where maybe you thought, okay, can this culture thing really work?
I mean, so think about it. The hardest challenge for me, just if I'm looking at the standing 30,000 foot back and looking at it, is you bring someone in, comes in, most come in completely broken, high quality individual, you know, their abilities far exceed their current output, right? Circumstances, consequences, has them in a state of brokenness. And they want to engage and they want to serve and they want to contribute back to a community and to a whether you want to call it a program or ministry or whatever, however they're identifying with it, they want to give back. And so you get them into leadership and they start serving. And you know day one, right? When you see them stepping up, I know it. They're going to leave. They're going to leave out of a poor choice, or they're going to leave out of continued growth. They're going to outgrow the role in which they are. So you're continuous. If you are supporting and leading and developing a truly transitional recovery community, one that is to empower you to get to the next step rather than to trap you there forever, you know that person that's doing so well. It's like what day are they leaving? Because we're going to celebrate that transition.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the biggest thing is once you get everything running all cylinders, you got all the right team together, you know that someone's going to, you know, step out and you got to support it and encourage. I mean, if you're saying this is who you are, it doesn't matter what industry that they're leading for you as a ministry or how big of a role they're playing, you got to come alongside them. And support them and encourage them to do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
That's so the hardest.
Yeah, the hardest thing is that you help to develop somebody to a certain point. They become an integral role in the organization or in perpetuating the culture.
Yeah.
And then you know that, all right, they're supposed to move on.
Yeah. You're continuously...
If you've done your job well,
they're
going to move on.
And so it's not like in a traditional program where people, it's like you're here for 3 months, you're here for 6 months, but they're there until they so they move.
Yeah, so you can stay with us as long as you're growing or pulling. If you start nesting and taking advantage of a great community and affordable housing and all the other benefits that's there, you're going to start feeling nudges. It's kind of like an eagle in a nest, you know, they start pulling all the comfort out so that they get out and fly. We don't do it that gracefully, right? It's like we start removing the beds and the chairs and changing the locks, you know, but not literally, but you have to be willing to look and say, okay, this person is becoming complacent and stagnant. It's not good for them, but it also, in the roles that we all serve, it can kill someone because that's just not who we are, and that's not what's beneficial to the whole organization. So that's probably, you're continuously developing leaders.
Yeah.
Now, is that a bad thing? No, because whether you're a leader or not with us, you're being prepared to be able to lead. So all of our leadership all comes from within the men that are living with us. So you look at that, it's, and you know that they're going to leave. Yeah, that's the biggest struggle.
So why did you choose culture? Why didn't you pick program? Why didn't you look at, hey, we're going to build a healthy organization here. Let's look at the successful models. There's not a lot of models that have culture as their main driving force. Why'd you make that choice?
I don't know that I ever made a conscious choice.
Oh.
If I'm being honest, I'd love to say, here, look at our business plan, and this was our minute. You know, it's no. It's that what was given to me was not a program. What was given to me was a lifestyle. What was given to me was to be consumed, right, for my benefit, with one condition, is that I had to give it away every day because that's the only way I could keep it. That was what was given to me. It wasn't, here's what you do, this is exactly how you do it, and make sure you do it this way every single day. It's whatever you have that day is got to be given away, because that's the only way I can keep what I got. So that's not a program. It's aligned with, you know, my personal faith and how the 12 steps were taught to me, not spoken, you know, not outlined as suggestions. It was taught. This is what is written. This is what you're going to do. And if you don't do this, please don't ever call me again. Right? Like, it's just, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
That's not a program. It's an adaptive of, this is the way I got to view the world. This is the way I've got to act. These are things that I need to do.
Yeah.
And then so it's just, those are the guys that I hung around with. That was the culture. What I wanted from them wasn't, they could recite this from page whatever this and paragraph here. It was the way they were living. It was the way they communicated. It was the way they held everybody accountable. And it was just truth was truth.
Well, what prompted the shift from, you know, just being like, you know, in recovery community, you know, we're all just a phone call away, and you can teach someone how recovery was taught to you, you know, on the phone, in person, what have you. But what prompted the shift from being a phone call away to being like, here's a bed, here's somewhere to stay?
That is a great question. I would love to tell you it was like years of prayer and probably that was not it. It was 2008. For those of you that may or may not know, there was a significant real estate shift, especially if you were in North Fulton. We had a tremendous amount of community banks. 7 of the 8 banks that I did business with were closed down by the FDIC. And I had a lot of free time on my hands. And we were finishing up one project and taking it through zoning. I had a house that was sitting there, and I intended on just buying it, fixing it up, and selling it. And at the time, executive assistant, she worked with me 20 years. She's like, this is the perfect place. I'm like, perfect place for what? She's like, you've always talked about it. And this was at a time where I couldn't write big checks, right? It was like everything was crunching down. All I had was time, and I had a house, and I made the mistake, right, of like, oh, well, you know, God doesn't really, I got too much other stuff and too much worry going on. Like, he doesn't want me to do this right now. You know, so you got to listen to people around you that know you, right, mm-hmm. to get the best for you in mind, and listen to them. And so I remember I put it up, like, we're going to go ahead and put utilities on it. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start with the renovation. We're just going to flip this thing. Go on, we need the cash. We don't need to rent a house out. I started to do it, and I put an ad out on Craigslist or wherever we were posting stuff back in 2008, 2009. And the very first phone call that came in was the guy started a kind of conversation with, like, hey, this is probably not something you want to do, but I want to open up a sober living house. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me, God. Like, really? Like, this is what the first call. Meet with the guy, and I say, okay, I can be more hands-on. We can shape this. It's here. It was there. And like 2 weeks in, I'm writing him a check to make him just disappear, because it was like he was not who he said he was. So now I have a house, and we have guys living in it that I feel personally responsible for. I would love to give you a different story of how we started. Yeah. But that's how it was. You know, we had two guys specifically. I remember Michael, I told to him about 6-7 months ago, he was trusting on the fact that what was told to him was going to happen in that house, and it was not happening, and I wasn't going to stand by. And that's what feeds it, is there's a huge need for true, authentic, accountable environments that require transparency. And mm-hmm. it's just hard to find. It shouldn't be hard to find in what we do, right? But it's like, it's hard to find. And so that's where it started. And there's a whole long story behind it with the previous owner and all that, that just the confirmation that, okay, we made the right choice, And then the choice that I made in that and stepping in is not something that I would have done, because I was too busy or too much worry or whatever. And I'm just glad I was obedient at a time where I didn't want to be at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just to say, okay, yeah, we'll do this. And that's where it started.
And so it started in 2008.
I had to look back. It's probably like officially in there, like right around 2010-ish.
That's still like 15 years ago.
Something like that.
And most sober livings don't make it that long.
Yeah, because they want it to be able to make money and pay for something. And it's like, I just believe if you're going to run it the way that it should be run, it's a ministry. There's no profit in it. And it takes a community and a ton of support to make it work. Because you know, one of our core tenets is that recovery should not bankrupt a person or a family.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you don't have money and just because you don't have insurance does not disqualify you from receiving help.
Good help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think the longevity is a testament to that authentic environment and help that you were sharing about.
Yeah. Oh, it's just that we're not perfect by any means, but we're flipping transparent, right?
Yeah. So that's a good transition that, you know, you were in 2008 and you had property and you were trying to make moves, because one of the things that's in your bio is that you're a serial entrepreneur.
Not a serial killer. Let's
say. I don't know.
So you've built, bought, and created multiple companies. How does that tie into your personal mission?
Where'd you get that bio anyways?
I don't know.
Okay.
He wrote it and then stole it.
No, it's been out there. But so, what was your question? Sorry.
How would you? So like you've to done all this business. You built and bought companies.
Yeah.
How does that tie into your personal mission? You bought a car shop. Yeah. You had no idea what a car shop.
That's a great story. The car shop's a great story though. So, I bought the car shop. Well, the phone rang for a car shop because it was on Highway 9. Okay. Which feeds into all our real estate back on the stories that, you know, on the real estate side. So phone rings and if it's on Highway 9, I want to buy it, right? If I can't buy it, I want to sell it. And if I can't sell it, then it shouldn't be sold. Kind of is the way my brain works. I know it's twisted, but that's just the way my brain works. And so immediately when Rachel says that we want to sell this, my first thought is, man, I know all these guys. They're extremely creative. And I don't know if you know this or not about a mechanic, but a true, true mechanic technician. I need to sit up?
No, I
need to sit up. I said, I have good posture. So.
You're pasteurized.
You're posteurized. It's the shirt. It's not going to be set up straight.
Straight leg tablecloth.
Yep. There we go. I was just waiting for the joke there.
They're just telling myself because I'm not straight here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But neither's on a serious note. So when that call came in, you know, on a mechanic that's a true mechanic technician is very artistic. And it's amazing how many mechanics and technicians you find in the recovery community. But finding a repair shop that is a safe place for a mechanic or a technician to work is pretty challenging. And that's no dig on any other shop. It's just in that field, you're looking for highly qualified, skilled labor. And so as long as they're showing up to work and they're doing it, then it's there. And so this business has been there 30 years. I thought for certain when I went home and I'm like, hey, honey, I got another great idea. We're going to buy a repair shop.
Honey is your wife.
Honey's my wife.
Yeah.
The better half. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like a tablecloth. I'm like, what is that? blazer? Kind of blazer? What kind of material is the blazer, though?
It's like
suede
velvet?
Blazer. Sorry, divest. But we come back. So I go home and I tell my wife, Dina, hey, honey, I got this great idea. We're going to buy this repair shop. It's been there for 30 years, so I can't screw it up too bad. I don't know any. Granted, I can drive cars fast and tear up trucks. I can't fix them, but I can tear them up. So I'm not a technician or a mechanic. I rely on them to keep it running. And so we're going to buy this shop, and then we got a great place to put guys to get to work so they can get really good skill training and go from there and get another job. And I'm expecting her to say, oh, that's a crappy idea. But I think I'd brainwashed her enough to know it's on Highway 9, so it checks one box, right? If I can't see it on my way home, right, or in a normal routine of a day, I don't want to own it anymore. And so it fits, checks that box, and then it's a missional piece. And then it's like, it's been there for 30 years, so you can't really probably screw it up too bad. So she approves. So the second was, well, I'm going to go to my dad. He's probably going to shoot it down. So it was not a good idea. I pitch it to him, and he's like, that sounds like a great idea. Now the problem is, now I got to buy a car shop that I know nothing about.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing. And so I end up flipping over to Napa Auto Care Center after we bought it, because I was at a car, like a truck rental, car rental place. And I meet the Napa sales guy for Napa Auto Stores. His name's Vinny. Mm-hmm. And that's where we struck up a conversation. It's a couple days later, we're now in Napa Auto Care because, like, hey, they can help us, you know, figure this out. Fast forward 2 years, a little over 2 years, sold it. We had almost tripled the revenue. And I didn't know anything about running a car shop. But what I did know is that when we sold it, every person was working there was one of two things, a felon or in recovery. Mm-hmm. Pastor Jason, that's on staff with us, came back from Texas to work there because you didn't know when you look at it. Or we didn't have any sales missions or anything. You had to, how many hours you had to turn was to serve God, serve your family, your team, and occasionally repair a car. Hmm. That's what we did. You walk into our showroom, kind of waiting area, it was three or four times bigger than what it was previous because we allocated space. It looked like halftime, you walk in there, there was a recovery meeting going on. Yeah. Like people would apologize when they walk in. There's so many people sitting around, but it gave people a place to come together. And what's amazing, it just all comes together. Our single largest donation last year to Vision Warriors came from a customer at Alpharetta Service Center years ago, right? So 6 years ago, he had an interaction there with Vision Warriors. But I've known the guy since my daughter was in kindergarten. Wow. Never given to Vision Warriors, right? Never asked him, if I'm being honest, never asked him to give into there. But when the opportunity presented for him, he gave based off the experience that he had at a for-profit car shop that was ran out of purpose and ran and based on culture, not on revenue. Mm. Yeah. Revenue is going to always follow.
Yeah. The thing I like about that story is you go to your advisors, right? You have people before you make a decision, right? You got people that you go to and you value what they say. And I think that's an important piece, especially for us in recovery. I mean, really any human, it's good to have wise counsel before you make major decisions. Sarah, do you have people in your life that are like that?
No, they're not wise. No, no, I do. 'Cause you know, making big decisions or even small decisions, you know, depending where in my recovery I was at, like having those people around me who know me well, know my pattern. So they can either call out like, yeah, that's a good idea. Or like, no, this sounds like this might be old behavior cropping up. I actually just recently had a conversation like that with somebody because there was something in front of me that, you know, I had a decision to make and I felt like I would have been so dumb if I turned it down. But I was like, it feels wrong to accept this. Like, I don't think this is right for me. So I called one of my brothers because I'm like, he'll know. Yeah. Like, he'll know. He'll tell me that I'm making a terrible decision by turning this down. And I called him. I was like, I can't do this. And he was like, that's fine. I'm like, come again? Yeah. What? And I was like, I like this thing that's happening in my life right now. And he was like, that's great. He was like, if you like that thing, he's like, you're ahead of me. I'm like, what is happening? He's like, yeah, it totally makes sense that he, You know, and he told me, he said, if you were to accept this decision in front of you, it would be old behaviors coming back. And that just like was a game changer for me. It was like, I've come far enough to one, have old behaviors. And then two, that's something that he respected me enough to point out for me.
Yeah. It's like a trusted advisor is different than anybody. Like how many people ask, like, I mean, you're in recovery, you're both in recovery, right? Do you get the newcomer? They want to ask you they want to ask questions and talk to you. But then they don't listen to a freaking thing you say. Yeah. It's like, okay, so you just wasted my time. And I just don't really have, I love that 30 days and under, because there's so much pain, they're like, they'll do whatever, right? It's like, oh, everybody thinks I'm brilliant. Look, he carried a brick around. He should still be carrying a brick. He wouldn't be making the center concrete block. But needless to say, and then somewhere in there, we will ask questions, but really just to go through the process rather than to ask someone that you trust and know that you're going to change your behavior decision based off that you asked and you wanted confirmation that yes, you should or no, you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You gotta have them.
Yeah. Cause I have new counsel. And so when I present it to like the new people, right, they're like, well, it doesn't sound like you're, you know, giving any credence to this new thing. It sounds like, you know, this is what you really want to do. And it's like, yeah, but you don't know me. Yeah, you weren't there when I was in the trenches. And so my family is one of like my last resort. Let me ask their opinion. Cause that's when I'm like really stuck and I need somebody who's not scared to hurt my feelings. Yeah. Whereas other people, you know, they might, I have people who have like, they'll spare my feelings. They'll call it to me straight. They'll, you know, like the different, depending on the gravity of the situation. Uh-huh.
Depending on what you want to hear.
They're going.
Yeah. If I know someone's going to tend to, you know, spare my feelings, I'm like, I can't call them about this because I don't want my feelings validated right now. I really need someone to just speak facts. I can't get emotions in the way. Yeah.
What advice would you have for people in recovery who want to create something meaningful?
That's a loaded question.
Well, a lot of people, you know, they start this new way of life, you know, and the pain of behaviors and past decisions leave, and they see other people doing things, and then they go, oh, I want to do this thing. I want to start this ministry, or I want to start a sober living, or I'm going to do this thing.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people I see do that, you know?
So, I mean, here's the thing. If there's someone already doing it, then try to buy them or join them, especially if they're doing it well. And if they're not doing it well and you have the most brilliant idea, then it should be really easy to convince them that they need to sell to you or partner with you because you're going to be able to help them be far more impactful.
I like that.
Man, it's like how many – just if you look just in sober livings alone, is that – I don't know of other than a couple of the big conglomerates that we were working with and referring to in 2012 or 13 that we're working with or referring to today.
Yeah.
Very few people can even tell you were at the same ministry or organization that they were in 2012 and 2013. I mean, one of our house managers just transitioned out. He picked up 6 years of sobriety this week. He's been living, paying dues at Vision Warriors, serving 30 to 40 hours a week, not getting paid, and tithing back to the ministry on top of that. Mm. If you don't have that culture sitting there that's drawing them to that they truly want to give away what's been given to them, it's not worth doing. But on the flip side of it is that I'm one of those guys that I'm dreaming continuously, and in dreaming though, there you have to have a team of people around you. They're going to hold you account. They're going to, is this a good idea? Is this not a good idea? Does this really need to be done? Are you doing it because you just want to say you did it, or is there a benefit to it? And my dad always tells me, is that any decision not made. So if I don't act, so I just don't want to do it because I don't want to make the decision. You cannot undo something that you didn't do, right? Like the consequences of that cannot be undone. A wrong decision, I can can be made right. Hey, so mm-hmm. I should have done this differently in here and own what was there. And I just think a lot of people, they just get in, especially in the recovery world. You know, it's like, how many counselors have you met 30 days in, and I'm going to be a counselor? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, let's just figure out how to tie our shoes, make our bed, you know, get prepared for the day. Like, where are those disciplines in your life? And it's like, so I love that zest and that desire, but it's like of years of shaping and discipline, and what would that refinement look like?
Well, I like what you said about join, right? Because I do think that there's, you know, if you're in a trade, right, you're a sheet metal worker or carpenter, or, you know, you become an apprentice.
Yeah.
You know, so the weight of the job and its success is not on you.
Yeah.
You play a role in that. And in sitting in that space and stewing that, you get to learn and you get to see. And maybe you see, well, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. Or you learn, okay, here's what they're doing that I wouldn't do.
Yeah.
And that time, maybe then when you do decide to, whatever, if what you want to do is there and you sit and join and you learn from somebody else for a while and it's still there after a while, you know what I mean? Then it's like, okay, this is something you need to do.
Yeah.
It's but like the jumping immediately because you think you can like put four people in a, in a garage and you're going to be rich.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to work out well for you.
But I think that's like the beauty about the dynamics of the recovery community is that when you have that person in their first 30 days, you're like, I'm going to be a counselor because a counselor changed their life. It's like, okay, cool. While you're learning how to tie your shoes, you know, you already know how to make your bed. Okay. Go show your friend how to make their bed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you still have something to offer people. So if that is the motivation behind the I'm going to be a counselor, put actual action to it that you can now. How can you impact your community now? You know, if you still in a year want to go be a counselor, power to you. Go do it. But right now it's and that pink cloud.
without a doubt. So I got two really quick examples for that. Don't be respectful of your outline
that I didn't read.
That I didn't, because he didn't send it to me.
Because you wouldn't read it.
Because I wouldn't read it.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. So we were on the same page. But anyway, so I will be respectful
of this page, but we're on the same page.
We're on the same page. Yes. Correct?
I don't know. I'm not the
It was a metaphorical page.
Oh, gotcha.
It wasn't this
so
page.
So, two.
Though, you wouldn't
two,
have read this page.
Golly.
Yeah. So all I can say is your editor's got a whole lot of work for you here on this one. But I will say I got two examples here that I want to make in is that. If fear and disbelief in the God-given talents that you have are keeping you from making that decision, then quit thinking that way and go do something immediately, right? And so prime example is we got a guy living with us right now that is a flipping artist beyond artist. Artist. Not like, oh, I can kind of paint. Artist. And his situation, so if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm not going to call you by name, but he knows who it is, right? And when I met with him this last week and what his talent and what his ability is he's about to be able to do in our sanctuary, it's like, dude, why are you stuck in that mindset that how have you not said this and displayed this talent that you have? And so if you have the ability and you have that talent, do not be afraid to fail. Because failing is not failure, right? Like that you just it didn't work that time. Try it again. As long as we're not failing the same way repetitively every time, you're not a loser. It just didn't work that time. Try it again. He's got unbelievable talent, and I hate to see that in people where they're afraid to take that step because of fear of failure or someone not accepting it and liking it. It's like, no, man, you've got to push through that because our mind is limiting our ability to do something that we should be doing. And on the other side of it, we had a guy living with us and he moved in. He said, this is what I want to do. I want to be a counselor. I want to be in this field. And he said that for the last year. And every time he's met with failure and met with not being accepted, right, he doesn't change his plot. He's still on the phone. He's still networking. He's still calling because this is what he's going to do. And so 2 weeks ago, I presented him an opportunity. Said, hey, dude, this is like, here's the test run gig. It runs to the end of May. This is the guarantee, nothing else past that. And he's just jumped in. But if all the rejection, it's not rejection, it just where he was in his journey and what he was looking to do. It wasn't accepted yet. It didn't defer him into something else. It's like, that's not what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Yeah. So if you got clear, clean conviction, I don't want anybody to hear me say, don't go chasing it, dude. You know, but don't chase squirrels. Mm-hmm. Chase the dream, chase your vision. Don't go chasing
waterfalls.
Yeah.
Stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to.
Sure.
I know that you're going to have it your way or not at all.
Whose way?
But I think that you're moving too fast.
Me?
You have no idea what song he's quoting.
I have nothing. So we'll pretend like I do.
That was so beautiful.
I'm glad a couple people got it. That's great. Okay, so how does entrepreneurship mirror the recovery journey? Great thing about an alcoholic is they got to keep busy.
Yeah.
We got no chill.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes you good at being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I'm not a very effective leader. I can say I can be an effective leader, but I have to be coached and held accountable.
Okay.
Okay. Because in my brain, this is just the way it should be done. And when you don't do it that way and you sleep too much and you don't get up and someone says no, you just go into a shell. Someone says no to me, then it's like, I just got to ask them three different ways. Like, I haven't asked them the right way, or I didn't position it the right way, or they didn't understand what I was saying because they should have said yes, right? And so to me, we have two things. Most people that come to this situation of brokenness that I found myself in and you found yourself in, a lot of times we're not the most employable individuals. Mm-hmm. So we had to be pretty creative. And we've had to be pretty creative to manage our life and all the situations and all the chaos that we're in. So at that point in time is how do you realign that to say it's like it's chaos. I'm comfortable in chaos. Chaos is not healthy for me at all times, but uncertainty doesn't keep me from acting. Mm. Uncertainty is not going to hold me bondage to, you know, and there can be a distorted view of that situation. And so that's why I really need to have wise counsel around me, because it's the uncertainty of, is this going to work or not work? It's like, man, that's just life. So I think I really do believe that if we're working a very healthy recovery program and balanced and have good accountability around us, we're at an advantage to be very entrepreneurially driven. Because you've got a support of people around you that are building you up and holding you accountable to things that you say are really important and what you're chasing after. It's no different than a board of directors, right? If you got posts that are really close, like you just referenced it. You called someone that really knew you about an opportunity that you had in front of you. That's not what people do normally, right? They make decisions, and then when it doesn't work out, they'll blame someone for not calling them. Like, why didn't you call me? And why didn't you tell me this was a bad idea? It's because you didn't ask, right? But if you're working a healthy recovery program, it just lends the support you better, because you're talking through everything before you act and before you do it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think if you figured out how to live in a van behind the Dairy Queen and smoke crack all the time, you probably could figure out how to run a car shop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about it? Just think of how many conversations.
Figure out how to find dope with no money.
Yeah. You're going to do it. I mean, maybe selling your neighbor's copper wiring out of their HVAC unit. Yeah. That's a different story.
You can figure all that out. You could probably run a hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you think about how many, on a serious note, think about how many conversations we've had over the last 6, 7, 8 years, whatever. How long have we known each other?
I don't know.
But we'll say we've had healthy conversations, some healthy conversations over the last 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
But you think how many of those were around either ministry or business or something that we were working on or dreaming of or wanting to do?
Yeah.
And not worried about how you were going to judge me on what – there was no judgment in it.
Yeah.
The freedom that comes in that pushes you and let you feel like, man, I got a crazy idea. You think it's going to be crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a couple people I can call, and I know they won't think I'm crazy, but they may tell me still it's a bad idea. That sounding board breeds excitement and willingness to feed your dream. I mean, look, an entrepreneur is a dreamer. We all have dreams, but at some point in time, people quit dreaming because either something that's happened to them or their disbelief that it could even possibly happen.
Yeah.
The only difference between someone that works for someone that creates a job is someone's willing to take the risk and dream to say, this is what I'm going to do. It's going to work, and here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then they're willing to change and pivot when it didn't work that way. So does that resonate with you?
Not really.
Not really? Where did I lose you?
I mean, I hear what you're saying, you know, like the difference between like the person who creates the job and the person who works the job. You know, I used to have my own business, and then I, you know, drank it away like an alcoholic. And then have a couple times thought about like, oh, I should go in business for myself again. And I think, you know, right now, like I am okay being an employee. You know, and it's not necessarily out of fear of like, oh, like, what if this fails? What if this? What if that? I just love somebody else figuring it out and then telling me what to do. Like, you know what? Yeah. There is comfort in that. And for me, that is the structure that I still need a little bit, you know, because when I am trying to create the work for myself, I lose structure. And then once I lose structure, I start going crazy. And when I go crazy, I'm not calling that sounding board anymore. Yeah. and things start to go haywire. So I think there's like, I don't know, comparing the two makes sense. But I also think neither one is more important than the other.
Definitely not more important, without doubt. But you're still creating, though. Entrepreneurially minded doesn't mean you got to be generating revenue. I saw a gift exchanged. From something you created because it's something you're passionate about, motivated to do, and driven for some reason in a talent that I don't have.
Okay. So, I've never separated entrepreneurial and revenue. They've always been.
There was an exchange. You told me a story, and I know the story because I'm not going to forget the story, because the way in which you shared it is that you gave someone an item, not him, because he's emotionally numb to it, and he didn't react the way that he should have. I'll talk to him about that later. But your other gift, a way in which you shared that here was something that you created, and even showed me the picture of what you created, because you were proud of what you had done. I'm wearing the plaid picnic table shirt. So we're in that setting, it's not because you even think I'm going to relate to it, but you created something that was passion from you. You gave it to somebody, and the exchange that occurred there was an emotional reaction that moved you and is going to feed you to continue to keep doing that.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what most people will never do. They will never create something in exchange for someone else because they're afraid it's not going to be accepted. It's not going to be valued. It's not going to be there. And so it's not all just about the money. Is you put yourself in that. So you're that spirit is in you. That is dead in most everybody you're ever going to meet. Because they're afraid when that exchange of service or good or whatever it is it's not going to be valued, not going to be accepted, not going to be appreciated. But it brought you joy. The way you shared it, I will never forget it.
Yeah.
Because in the way in which you shared it.
Wow. No, I appreciate you reframing that. That never would have separated entrepreneur and revenue and thought about it that way.
Yeah. And it's also nice when your art is not tied to your money. Because then you can just be your freaking art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm doing with music right now. I'm just making music. I don't care. Sure, I'd love for somebody to like it, but that's not why I'm making it. And I'm not making it because I want to sell it, or it's because I have to freaking create. I have to create. And so I'm so glad that the music hit me again, because it's been such a relief. It's a spiritual experience for me when I create music. And because there's no monetary tie to it, there's no trying to keep up or sound like anyone, it just makes that such a freer, purer, creative expression. And then I think the art actually ends up being better.
Yeah.
Because I'm not filtering it through all this stuff. And so then, ultimately I like it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like the painting you gave me today, you like that painting, you know?
I want a ghost.
That's awesome. You want a ghost?
I can get you a ghost.
I want one.
But will you get the ghost tattooed?
See, now that's commitment.
All right. Let's not leave without talking about this, because top 10 signs that you're an alcoholic is you get 30 years sober and then you go for a 30-day hike.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you realize today that when you have your advisor that's helping you, it's 30 days? Because I miscalculated. I got two number threes on there.
Oh, so it's 31 days of hiking.
So it's 30 nights of camping, 31 days of hiking. So, yeah.
So what inspired you? Where did this... You're like, okay, I'm going to get 30 years. Now, that's what sounds good is...
Well, I never thought I was going to get 30 years. And I will say, I mean, for the record, it's the first time in 30 years that I've future tripped as much as I have, because I never focus still as today. I'm living today in 24-hour blocks of time. And so now I'm focused out. You know, 6 months ago, I was focused out on a day in the future. Mm. And it's like, dude, it's like, it's messed with my head, which is fragile. It's messed with it on so many things because I'm future tripping out like, oh, I got to be sober this day. No. It's like, I got to be sober that day. And I'm like, it's like crazy. Yeah. It's 30 years later, and it's like, I still just want to live in today. So, you know, it's like we were on a four-day hike, right? I'd love to say this was planned and all this, but we were on a three-day hike, four days and on Appalachian Trail, and we came past a Benton McKay trail sign. And so I just happened to ask, like, what's the Benton McKay trail? I've figured it's one of the little 6 or 8 mile little loop trails that come off of the Appalachian Trail. I did not know that we had a hiking scholar amongst us. So he used to live at Vision Wars and he loves to hike. And so he goes down this whole 30-minute dissertation about Benton McKay and why it's there and all this. And then I made the mistake. I was like, well, how long is it? Because if he's just talked that long, it's got to be more than 6 or 8 miles, right? Mm-hmm. He goes, oh, it's like 300 miles. And then my sick, twisted brain, because we had been talking about on the previous couple of days.
How long would it take you to hike 300
miles?
Well,
they had been talking about, like, dude, what are we going to do for your 30-year, you know, sobriety? I was like, I don't know, like, pick up a chip, maybe? I don't know, go to dinner? Like, I just wasn't thinking, like, let's throw an event. It's not about me, right? And so that's in our conversation. And so then I go, it's like, that's 300 miles. That's like 10 miles a day. It's like 30 days. Well, I don't know that we could definitely stop and end on the 24th. That would be hard, but I know I could start on that day. And so maybe it takes 25, maybe it takes 35. It doesn't matter. And so we talk about it. I call my wife when we get in the car. And by the time we got back to Alpharetta, you know, the next day, it was like, it was set. We're going to start the 24th. We're going to hike for 30 days. And the next thing I know, Jason Pye's like, well, I'm in. I'm like, in on what? He goes, well, I'm hiking with you for 30 days.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay. He goes, I wasn't going to ask you. I was just going to tell you I was going to do it with you. So that's where it started. And it's beautiful in that is that a recovery journey we don't do by ourselves. And we always have sobriety day is really important. Don't get me wrong. It's important. But I've met plenty of just jerks that are just, they may have not drank and drugged in a year or 2 years or 18 years or whatever. They're just miserable, unhappy drunks, right? They may not be drinking, but they're not free. And so we've named it the Warrior's Path because your recovery journey is much like a path. You know, I mean, the trees are, for those that haven't ever hiked on Appalachian Trail, whatever, I mean, the trees are marked and blazed. The path is beaten down. You can see it, but that doesn't mean that the next step is any easier to go the right direction. And so you're either following somebody ahead of you or somebody's behind you pushing you or someone's walking there. But at the end of the day, it's like every step we're literally carrying the weight and burdens of others on it. And no one should walk alone. So,
but 30 days though, dog?
Why not? I mean, if it's 3 or 4 days, right. It's not there. Imagine pulling yourself out of everything else for 30 days to say that we're going to be completely present on each single step that we take. Mm. Each step to where you
sounds
hire.
Like going back to treatment.
Not even so much treatment, but just back to this, God, why do you have me on this path? Should I stay on this path? Right? Am I really need? Have I done what I should have done with the ministry to where I can leave for 30 days and everything still function the way that it should.
Let's take a poll real quick, everyone in the room. Who thinks he's going to do the actual full 31 days hiking? Huh? Well, I couldn't hear you. I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah. So, but in that, it
everyone has raised their hand. They've all spent an hour.
Everyone but Christian raised their hand. Let the record show. Because I was the only one on camera, and my hand was up like this, and you forgot to do that.
I didn't forget. I don't know. That's a huge undertaking. It's huge.
What's the longest you've hiked? Like, how many days hiked or camped?
6, 7 days, 8 days, something like that.
So how are you going to go? Because you're now tripling your time.
Like, not really. I'm just doing it a day at a time.
Well, okay. Yeah. Yes. However. When you pack.
In a row is what it is, though.
Right? Like,
this is not an easy thing.
They don't make they don't make backpacks that you can go for 30 days. Like, what is the logistics?
So the gentleman we were talking about that's been wanting to get in recovery, we hired him as our logistics committee director. See, everybody can get a director title, right? But he's got a chance now to earn it. We've got every day plotted. This is the mileage. This is where we're camping. This is where we're going. I got 3 nights off the trail so I can see my wife, because my wife's idea, I love her, but my wife's idea of camping is the hotel does not have a concierge and room service, right? And if they have room service but not a concierge, it's not a hotel, it's camping. Mm. So I got 3 nights off the trail so I can be with my wife, because I want to be with my wife.
Yeah.
So I got 3 nights off the trail. I have 3.5 days worth of things didn't work out the way that we wanted them to work out. So one day is going to be really miserable because you got to make up for the day before.
And there's going to be supply drops along the way.
Yes, we got supply drops along the way. We've got it. So for guys like Christian that don't want to come hike with us, right?
I'm going to hike with you, but I'm not doing like 30 days.
That's all right.
I ain't got that long money, dog. I can't disappear for 30 days.
The only way I disappear for 30 days
is something really bad happened.
So, and we may not want to walk with you on that. But what we do want to do this is it'll be brave.
No way.
Yeah. Through the glass in the cushioned room. But really, this way is to create it. For those that want to come and hike a day or 2 days or a week or the whole time, they're welcome. For those that don't want to hike, they can come in and have dinner with us at a campground that we're coming through. So we're really trying to integrate it in to show that a recovery journey. Most of the individuals that have helped me the most in the last 30 years are not in recovery, right? They're in my life, and they're walking with me on my journey. And so my hope, my prayer for this is at the end of it, that it's a piece that lasts, where it's like no one walks alone. And whatever struggle or whatever success we have, and if you're walking alone, it's a lie that you've bought into, because we were not created by our Heavenly Father to be alone. We were created to be connected and in community with Him and others.
So people will be able to go to a website, kind of see where you're going to be on the path. They can choose to say, we want to walk a day with you or a couple of days with you.
Yeah.
You're also raising money for Vision Warriors through this, and then raising awareness for addiction and recovery.
Yeah.
So you're taking this, but it's going to be an intense personal journey for you.
Oh, dude, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's it. But you got to embrace the suck. There's nothing good that has ever come to me in my life that has not come after pain and after discomfort.
Mm.
Nothing. Right?
She's shaking her head yes, and I'm shaking my head no.
So at the end of it,
because it's like, true. Right?
I mean, it's everything we do. So if I mean, it's like any decision I make, there's a sacrifice. I'm giving up something to make that decision. Right? And most people will never look at what sacrifice has been made. By me going on this journey, here's the things that I'm going to miss with my family, that I'm going to miss with my friends. There's a benefit. I mean, there's a reward that I believe and I'm claiming victory in, that I'm going to receive.
Yeah.
The clarity and confirmation and the impact that I can't even imagine that can happen from it. But there's still sacrifice. And not just a visual, tangible thing. I mean, utter sacrifice.
If someone's interested in joining you, I guess the start place where they go, waron.org, right?
And go to waron.org. We're going to have a tab there. So we're running it all on social, so they can follow us, Vision Warriors, on Instagram, on Facebook, for all our daily updates, everything. So contents, creative team's been hired.
I think we've already signed up Brian and one of our future interns.
Yeah.
They're going to walk a couple days with you.
Perfect.
and be filming some of that.
Perfect.
And you're filming a lot of the journey as well.
Yeah, so we got a documentary being done that's going to be busted into a 5-part series so that people can take bits and pieces of it so that the impact can live beyond a donation to Vision Wars or my time on the trail that hopefully, not hopefully, that people will be able to view something and see the interaction of someone's journey and what it looks like just walking a path. That's clear what we should be doing, but that doesn't make it any easier at times. And we got to have that community around it. So it'll be there. The other thing I will say is if there's nonprofits that align with who we are and what we believe in, what we're doing, what we serve, then we got a way for you to have a free fundraiser. So they can reach out to us and join right in and set up a team around it. So this is, if we didn't put our, and my thing is what we have to give away. So if we're willing to spend all the money to make this happen, then corporately as a ministry, we should be doing the same thing we're asking the guys to do. So we'll give back 80% of every, 80% of what they raise back to them. Then they don't have to manage anything. They just have to just share the message.
Yeah. Okay, so everyone raised their hand. They said you would finish. Who is going to join him for at least one day?
I mean, I can try. Right? I don't know where it is.
A lot less hands.
Yeah.
But Keely over here raised her hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a couple other people over here raised their hand. So.
So, yeah. Plenty of opportunities to just, you can hike a half a day up and turn around and walk back to the car where you were. It's a beautiful, beautiful place, without a doubt.
Any comments, questions, or memes on this 30-day hike?
I mean, power to you.
Yeah.
It sounds terribly awesome. Yeah. I don't know, man. 30 days is a long time.
Yeah. No, it is.
I think it'll be good, though.
It's just 30 days.
Maybe a ghost with no feet for him to receive at the end of his 31 days.
Now, I will say on that, if nothing else, if no one else hears anything, we want to raise a ton of money. Not so it goes to me, so that we can continue to do what we're doing. Yeah. Unbelievable. We put a goal of $150,000, and we're going to exceed it, right? It's just going to happen. We're claiming it. It's not something I can do. It's where everybody's get around. So if they don't see value in it and people don't see value in the messaging, then it'll stay flat, and then it was a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah,
but that's not going to happen because I'm not trying to control it. I just want to participate in the hike. We're letting everybody else tell the story. But on the backside of that, if you don't want to hike, you don't want to give to it, can't give to it, what you can do is share your influence and share your Facebook feed and share your Instagram feed. So it's going to be really easy to click and share and just give someone hope. But join us May 24th at Amicola Falls for the celebration. And so that's pretty easy. You can drive up to the group shelter where you get out and eat good food and watch a bunch of folks come in down the mountain together. So
smelling really good.
What's that?
Smelling really good.
We're going to be taking some showers.
Yeah. All right, Kirk, thank you so much. I think some key takeaways, is to have the trusted board of advisors, people that you can talk to.
Got to.
That if you have a gift and talents and to pursue your goal, to chase after it and not let a failure not let failing be a failure to continue to pursue it. What other key takeaways you get, Sarah?
I mean, first of all, asking me to remember things, very offensive, very rude. But no, I think you really nailed it. The one that really stuck out to me was the trusted board of advisors when you were talking about the similarities between entrepreneurship and recovery, and then also what we discussed about how can you help the community now. You can't be a counselor now, but if you still want to be a counselor in a year, let's talk about it. But what can you do right now? Staying in today.
Next week we got Dr. Zach. He's a neuropsychologist, a little smarter than us. He's going to be here. He's going to be talking about, it's really fascinating. He's working with runners, people who play sports and collegiate sports, professional sports, and teaching them how the brain works. So when they hit these walls physically, for them to understand what's happening in their brain, that they haven't necessarily hit a physical wall, it's a mental, and how to learn how to break that And I think it's going to be a pretty brilliant.
He needs to come out about day 13, 14.
You know, I'll mention it to him because I think he would actually be probably interested in taking that and some great conversations. So
that's going to be, it's like, where is the, oh my gosh, we really agreed to do this. Because then you got to finish it. Like,
yeah,
there's no chance of stopping.
Once you start. And I know this about you, man. When you set off to do something, unless something really crazy happens, you're going to finish it.
I appreciate you letting me be here.
Thank you. This has been an episode of The Most High Show. Thank you to the donors, supporters who make this possible. Thank you to Brian on the ones and twos, Leslie doing quality control, and thank you to our in-studio audience for hanging out and listening to us. This is The Most High Show.